September 28th, 2022. Ward Green here. It is 11:04 hours, and I've got some great news. Apparently, I'm going to talk about it later once I talk to my advisor, but apparently my annuity was approved just recently, or at some point it was approved. So that's good. Great news, because that means we don't have to do any more you know, shopping for annuities and that kind of thing. So the other thing, I have a great discovery that I made. It's the most significant discovery that I've ever made to do with the Bible, possibly anyway, although it's not inconsistent with some of the other views I've had about the Bible. I've known this concept about the Bible partially. It's about the ancient Hebrew language, specifically. I knew the idea that prophecy was spoken of as though it had already come true. I've mentioned that before in my discussions, either online, in my articles, or somewhere. And it's the idea that when a prophet speaks, he's not just saying that it will come true, he's saying it already has come true. Okay? And that's the prophecy that he utters. But it's not just prophecy it's the Hebrew language that we're talking about. That's what it is. The ancient Hebrew language, as well as perhaps the modern day Hebrew language too, but certainly we're talking about, in this case, biblical Hebrew. Biblical Hebrew, which is an ancient language, and someone estimated at some point 80%. I'm just recalling that number. I'm not sure if that's the right number, but something like 80% of all ancient Hebrew is in the Bible. We don't have a lot of ancient Hebrew other than the Bible. But what people do believe about, the experts believe this, that the past perfect tense does not exist in biblical Hebrew. And the reason is because there's only perfect and imperfect in Hebrew, in the verbs. So the idea is that either an action has been completed, in other words, he has done it, he had done it, or he will have done it. You know, it either will get done, it has been done, or it had been done already prior to some earlier time. Those ideas are all together in one. Okay, I just noticed calcium affected my throat again, so it's not completely eliminated by eliminating sugar, but it's not making my voice squeaky, at least so far. Anyway, it's causing something phlegm in my throat. But this is the cow's milk that does that. It's not, goat's milk doesn't do that. So it's not a calcium thing. It's the fact that cow's milk is not digestible by humans, because cows have more stomachs than we do. That's what it is. So anyway, I'm going to have to try to find a way to incorporate the goat's milk, I guess. Eliminate the cow's milk. But the idea about the Hebrew verb tenses, there's only imperfect, there's no past, present, and future. There's no past, present, and future in Hebrew, okay? That's the idea. No past, present, and future in ancient Hebrew. There's only perfect and imperfect. Either he was doing it, is an imperfect past tense. It is what it could mean if they say the imperfect. If an imperfect verb is there in Hebrew, in the Bible, it could mean he was doing it, but it's not completed yet, or it wasn't completed yet at some previous time. Or it could mean he is doing it now. I mean, it could mean either of these. He is doing it now, but it's not completed yet. Or it could mean he will be doing it, but it won't be completed in the future. So the imperfect means it's in the process, and the perfect verb form means it's finished. He had done it prior to an earlier time, or it could mean also he has done it already prior to now, or it could mean he will have done it. In other words, it's a prophecy of the future. So the imperfect and the perfect are the prophecies, Okay, they're the ones that they're finished. They will be done. It's spoken by God. It's going to happen. But there's no past, present, and future in Hebrew. That's what I learned, okay? So knowing that, then we look at Luke. Take a look at Luke, verse 24 of chapter 1. Luke 1:24, in the Bible in basic English, it says, after that time, Elizabeth, being certain that she was to become a mother, kept herself from men's eyes for 5 months. We can now translate that. After that time, Elizabeth, being certain that she was to become a mother, had kept herself from men's eyes for 5 months. You see that? So that's easy to see how the perfect tense there, you know, the perfect verb form, the perfect tense, I guess we call it tense. What do we call it? The perfect, it's not tense because it's not past, present, future. It's the perfect form of the verb. It could easily be translated, had kept herself. Now, wait a minute, though. But that's not in Hebrew, is it? It's in Greek. But actually, wait a minute. Yeah, we'll have to look up ancient Greek. But this is, the book of Luke was, I think the book of Luke was written in Hebrew. See, there's a lot of work to do here. Was the book of Luke written in Hebrew? Well, maybe it was Matthew. One of the Gospels was said to have been written in Hebrew. See, in English we have these wonderful, and in German, and in French, in these Romance languages, and in German and English as well, we have these past perfect, and, you know, we have pluperfect, you know, which is like he had done. We have these tenses in addition to the perfect and imperfect. And he will have done. They didn't have that in Hebrew. Okay, was the book of Luke written in Hebrew? Let's just see. What language did Luke write in? Greek, okay. It says here. The four Gospels, it says here, this is not the absolute truth, this is just what I'm finding when I Google it and look at the main answer. The four were written in Greek, the four Gospels, it says here. But I know there are copies in Hebrew, so I don't think that's true necessarily. What that says isn't necessarily true. There's a Hebrew copy that may have preceded the Greek. In some cases, I believe that's true because I've seen that already. So let's search our insight books and see what we can find. Search the insight book on that. Okay. Gospel. Luke. Let's go. There we go. I've got to get down to the L. Here it is. Good News According to Luke. There we go. So, I'm in the Insight book. I think it was 84 it was published, this version of it. Time written. All right. Okay, anyway, points of uniqueness. Highlights of the book. Okay, I guess that's it. I guess that's all. I haven't found. It might have been the Book of Matthew, actually. I just remember seeing that there was a Hebrew manuscript of some of the Gospels, whether or one of them anyway, that indicates, seems to imply that it was written in that language originally, because Greek was the common language. You wouldn't translate into Hebrew, very likely. You wouldn't translate into Hebrew from Greek at the time of Jesus, because Greek was the Koine Greek, the language of the common people, the Koine Greek. Even though Jesus probably spoke Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek, and his disciples may have done so too. I mean, it was just the Greek was the common language, and it would have been the written language, because the Roman Empire hadn't yet taken over completely in terms of Alexander the Great, you know, had conquered in sometime around 300 BC. He'd conquered all these countries, and the Greek language had taken over, and Latin wasn't common at the time of Jesus, because the Romans hadn't really dominated for very long compared to Alexander. So anyway, that's another thing to research. But yeah, but the thing is, yeah. So in ancient Greek, let's just do a quick. I just realized when I'm talking about this, this is actually the Greek scriptures. It's not the Hebrew scriptures. So the idea that the ancient Hebrew didn't have that past perfect tense. Does the ancient Greek have the past perfect verb tense? I guess it's called tense. Yeah. No. Ancient Greek has no past perfect, has no perfect progressive or past perfect progressive. Now let's define past perfect progressive and find out what it is. I don't know. Past perfect progressive suggests that it's not only finished, but it's perfect. It's a completed action, but it's ongoing or something. Past perfect progressive. What's progressive? I just don't know. But let's just look it up. The past perfect continuous tense. An action started in the past and continued up until another time in the past. Right. That's what we're talking about. She kept herself hid. It has none of that. It has no. Okay, so that proves my point. It's true of the ancient Greek too. This is fantastic discovery about biblical languages, because it means we already knew this intuitively, because when you read the Bible, you get the sense that it's always struggling to express these verb forms that we take for granted in English, like he had done this prior to September 1st, right? Or he or she will have done it by November 4th. Or, you know, these ideas are in the European languages, the English, all of this stuff. In our languages today, we have these complex structures like past and present verb forms that they didn't have, because they didn't need them, because you could imply or you could interpret it always. Like, you could take it as in the past, in the present, and the future. They spoke in a wide open way. Everything was past, present, and future. Everything was past, present, and future. Just think of it, okay? So that scripture in Luke, Elizabeth had kept herself, is a perfectly valid translation of that. So that the 5 months could already have passed when Zechariah saw the vision in the temple. So that my argument is perfectly valid, the argument I've made already, which I didn't understand, you know, explicitly, but I knew intuitively it was the right answer. And plus, it fits the facts of 6 BCE being the birth year of Christ, with the Passover falling at the time of Zechariah's appearance at the temple in his duties, calculating back from 70 CE, all the weeks of the service of the different service groups at the temple, which I've already talked about before, and I will have to talk about again. I guess I may have to write something, or I may have to do something more about it, because it's got to be documented where you can see it. But the article that was written that talks about these service groups was the article written by Rick Lansing. This is not the one. Wait a minute. Is it? No. Okay. It's somewhere over here, I guess. Where is it? Hmm. Oh. Okay, that's not good. I don't have it. I had it here at some point, right? Oh, I must have. I just decided I didn't need that article anymore, I guess. Well, just go into my history and look up Rick Lansing. That's easy. Go into browser history, right? And then you say search. And I say Lansing. That'll find it. Maybe. No. Nothing. Okay. It's called, the article was called no, I can't remember what it was called. Rick Lansing. I'll Google search it. I've saved the article. I have it on my hard drive. Wait a minute. I save these things because I never know when somebody's going to delete the internet or something. Right? So I do save these things. I try to keep track of them so that they don't get lost. So here it is here. Okay. Well, the only thing I did save was I saved his PDF file, which shows the division of Abijah, the priestly divisions of the temple. And the fact, we know that Zechariah was in one of those divisions. And then, I didn't save the article. Okay. That's all right. Oh, well, I mean, I'm almost sure I can get it from the PDF file. Let's open the PDF file. See whether it says anything in the article about this, you know. I'm at the end of the file. Does he say no? There's no reference in the file to his article, but it's in the article. Rick Lansing, okay. It's about the time of Christ, the birth of Christ. The date of Christ's birth. Yeah, date of birth, right? The date of Jesus Christ. The dating of Jesus, I think it's called the dating of Jesus Christ. I just remember. Or something like that. Okay, wait a minute. The year. The year. I think we'll look up year. I think his name is Rick Lansing. They're not showing. Come on. Who is Rick Lansing? Okay. It's at Bible Archaeology or something like that. But Bible. Yeah, Lansing Bible Church. He's online. Okay. Okay, the year of Christ, year of Jesus Christ, year of birth of Jesus. I'm going to try to find this here. This article. Oh, it's not easy to find. Okay, it's on Biblical Archaeology. That site. If it's still online, it's a very easy article to find when you're searching for the right thing. But it's very difficult to find it otherwise. Okay. Year of birth of Jesus Christ. Okay. So I'll search in my own search history. Okay. Birth or Jesus Christ. Let's just search for Jesus Christ. I don't search online for Jesus Christ all that much. Here he is, okay, or here it is, right? Here's stuff is. No? Okay, the word Jesus Christ, maybe. It's just the word Christ, probably, that I want here. Christ, right? Yeah, it's strange, okay. And the date, maybe. Pinpointing the date of Christ's birth. Associates for Bible for Biblical Research. Yeah, that's it. So, that's the one. Okay, so I've gone there. There appear to be two separate copies of it. Or two times I visited that site, anyway. So here it is. So I'm going to get that back into my tabs and keep it there. It's important. It's an important article. He talks about all the details of this. You calculate, we know from the Bible what priestly division was serving at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 CE, and we calculate back from that. That's what, and he did the calculations. He tabulated everything all the way back. So it's not even a calculation. It's just he wrote it all out. All the way back to the time 6 BCE. So he agrees with 6 BCE, actually, as the time. But we have just a few minor disagreements with which week it was. But I've described that. I just haven't written an article yet about it, but described it. So anyway, this solves the dilemma of Luke, because it means that Zechariah doesn't have to be... There's no dilemma. I mean, Zechariah could have been silent for 9 months, but it's easier for him to be silent for 3 months than 9 months. So the account in Luke is much better accommodated, much more easily accommodated by this interpretation. Plus, there's no reason to assume that Elizabeth would believe she was pregnant until she could see the manifestation after 5 months. So, you know, women start to manifest pregnancy sometimes after about 5 months. It's typical for it to become visible in the belly of the woman at about that time period. So this is an interesting... So that's such an important concept, because that explains why Luke mentions the 5 months. Okay, so it's absolutely rock solid. And no one has ever mentioned that I've ever seen before. No one has ever given this interpretation. But that's because no one ever had my genealogy, or our genealogy, the chronology, which I have worked on very hard for many years now. I don't know, maybe back as far as 2009. Let's see, when did I... Let's go back. Let's take one of my articles. This is my recent article, Born and Raised. So if I go back to the end of my article, it gives a list of my previous articles. And so if you read one of my earlier articles, you won't get this list, because they didn't exist yet. The later articles didn't exist. So you need one of my more recent articles to get the full list, or to get a more full list. So when I look here, I don't give the year for some reason. But what I should have put the year for each article. I just realized I can add that in the future, where I give my references to my own work. I can go back to... I mean, there's a lot of things I wrote about the chronology of the Bible. A lot of articles. The first one really is to do with the Bible is the article called Green, which is my own name, but it's also the name of the former Israeli Prime Minister Ben-Gurion. The name Ben-Gurion is son of Green, in other words. Gurion is green. It's the same name in Hebrew that we have in English, called green, right? The last name Green, the surname, is like the Hebrew word Gurion. It's the same word, because vowels are not very important in language. That's historically, they weren't. Certainly not in Hebrew. And in ancient languages, vowels were not generally used until, because Hebrew is one of the most ancient languages, and it didn't use vowels. That's why I say that. So, I mean, it's just, vowels aren't necessary to be written down. That's why we have so many accents, too. Because even if you write down the vowels, you don't know how they're pronounced. So it's not necessary to write the vowels down, because nobody knows how they're pronounced anyway. Like in Australia, they say grain instead of green. I mean, they pronounce the vowel differently. It's like, you know, everything is different. In all the different English accents, Australia, New Zealand, and everything, there are variations in how the vowels are pronounced. So if I go back to Green, what year was it produced? Do I even give anything at the end? Maybe at the end or something? Well, okay. My first article was nothing to do... Oh, here it is. Yeah, 2009, that would have been my guess. But it was... that's the correct... timing. So 2009 was my first article to do with biblical chronology. Now it's been 13 years, roughly, since I started developing the genealogy. So that's interesting and significant, historically significant. because now we're at the point where we have Jesus being born in 6 BCE, and it took a lot of work to get to this point. Anyway, so let's stop talking about that for a moment if we can, because there's still the chess scandal I want to talk about one more time, because after I made my video yesterday, I noticed the chess scandal had an update for a couple of days ago, because somebody published a YouTube video. Do we say an YouTube video? I'm not sure, but they published in September 25th, 2022. It's called, the video is called "The Most Incriminating Evidence Against Hans Niemann." Now, this is not necessarily incriminating. It's just they're saying it's the most incriminating, but they're not saying it incriminates him. But what it is they've come across some remarkable data, and GM Hikaru, his YouTube channel, GM Hikaru, talks about this video, and also, you know, I didn't listen to all his viewpoints. I just listened to his video to follow what this other video was saying. But then I found this video afterwards. And I haven't even listened to this video all the way through, but he covered it. And I listened to some of what he said. But the thing is, I wasn't really interested in his opinions because he didn't give an opinion as far as what the statistics means. But what I, at least not in the parts I listened to, and he seemed very hesitant to do that. So I'm not interested in knowing. I mean, the thing is, what Hans Niemann has said is that the silence of the critics speaks for itself. So if you listen to what Niemann is saying, there's no sign of guilt at all. Like, he's very adamant. He doesn't indicate any sign of what a criminal would be like, which would be evasive, and he just comes right out and says, you know, he answers strongly, so he's not evading any of these things. He's got a very strong answer to his critics. So I don't think this is incriminating, but I'm going to say what it is. She presents the fact that he had, I think it's 10 occurrences of 100% correspondence between his games and the chess engines. 10 examples where his games corresponded according to some program that calculates these correlations. It's just a program, so we don't even know if the program is doing these calculations in the best way either. That's it. But when we compare it, I saw another video too where Casablanca, not, is it Casablanca? No, it's not Casablanca. Capablanca. Capablanca, the famous chess player, had one game where he played 100% correlation to a modern chess engine, according to somebody's calculation. Online, I saw another video that talked about that. So even Capablanca had a 100% game. And there's another modern-day grandmaster who's got a 100% game. So it's possible to play 100% like the engine, just like an engine. You can play like a computer. In some cases. The other, I forget the guy's name. Is it Geary or is it somebody else? Somebody had one 100% game. I don't think it's Geary. Someone had one 100% game and one that was in the 90s. And they were the best games he ever played. And he was a modern day chess grandmaster. But Niemann has like 10 of these games. But the other things that speak in Hans's favor is, he's got dozens and many, many games where he plays worse than 50%. And, you know, I mean, he plays worse, you know, in the 50s and all that. Just like a grandmaster should play in the 60s or 50s or whatever. So, and also, at his best, Magnus Carlsen plays about 70%. But some games he plays better. And there was one game that Hikaru talked about where, what's the fellow's name? He's got the Spanish name. Fabiano Caruana played an 87% game. And a couple of Hikaru's games, there was another game, 81%, I think, and Hikaru had an 82% game himself, I think, where he correlated to the engine with a correlation of about 82% the same. So the whatever these programs are that calculate this, they're not infallible programs. They're just some program that someone wrote to calculate the correlation. But, I mean, if you were to believe that Huns were guilty, which is there's no evidence of it because he speaks strongly against that, and I mean, if he were guilty, I guess he could still be speaking strongly against it if he's trying to prevent people from knowing. I mean, it's possible he could be guilty. We're not saying it's not possible. I just, when I see his side of it and their side of it, it's all statistics that is against him right now. That's the only thing against him, and it's not really against him. It just says he's a great player who has flashes of brilliance. Or either that or he's cheating. Which either he has flashes of brilliance or he's cheating. Those are the only two possibilities. Because he's got 10 games where he plays perfect. But he also has 23 games where he plays above 90% also. He's got a lot of games, but he doesn't play every game like that, and he doesn't play them in succession. And Bobby Fischer, when he was at his best, he played like 72% on average for 20 games in a row. On average, 20 games in a row. When he was at his very best for 20 consecutive games, Bobby Fischer played 72%. So, like a chess engine. 72% like a chess engine. So all these things say that Hans Niemann is either brilliant and he can memorize things extremely well, which could be true, and he might, you know, and he gets an occasional 100% game because he's good at chess and memorizing and things like that. And also he gets some 90% games, but he has lots of terrible games. He loses games where he plays badly. So it doesn't look like there's evidence that, but, you know, he did beat Magnus in that game where he said, you know, the chess speaks for itself, and he didn't give that interview. That was evasive, right? He didn't give the interview. So, I mean, there is some, if you want to try and convict Hans Niemann, there is some evidence, but you would need to catch, you know, find the smoking gun. There is no smoking gun. I mean, you'd have to find the device that he's using to cheat. That would be the only way. Or he'd have to confess, or something else more incriminating than what we have so far. But what we do, what is there now with this, with the evidence of this video about the evidence against him in the correlations to the chess engines, it's not really evidence against him. It's evidence in favor of his skill, or could be taken as incriminating. It's not just incriminating only. It's not. It's not really incriminating at all, in fact. When somebody plays really well, or when someone's really smart, people always suspect cheating. That's something to keep in mind. You know, I don't think Hans should cave in and start to admit to a whole bunch of other things just because people are making these accusations. That's just silly. I mean, he's got no obligation to do that. If Hans is not cheating, he should say nothing, if possible, except where, you know, he is compelled to speak by principle. You know, I mean, he doesn't need to speak to tell the world or to give any of his time to the world just because they're accusing him of cheating. That's their problem. If he's not cheating and they're accusing him, that's their problem. So that's the latest. Anyway, there's some fascinating statistical information that one could say that if you want to believe he's guilty, then you have to. You could say that he's cheating in an occasional game, and that he occasionally. But then that doesn't explain the 90%. If he's going to cheat, why would he cheat 90%? So that doesn't explain. So there's no. He's got all these 90% games that's excellent games where he's playing at a very high level, but not as high as the chess engine. So why would he? So if it's possible he's using the chess engine for parts of those games and then reverting to his own mind for the rest of the game. But if he does that, he might lose and cheat and lose. And I mean, it's hard to evaluate whether someone would do that. Anything's possible. He could, were he cheating, he could be saying, yes, I'm going to cheat for part of this game and not the whole game because I don't want to cheat too badly. I don't want to be too... I mean, that's... It just doesn't seem likely. If you want... If the purpose of cheating is to win the game, then you're going to cheat 100%. So I think the 100% games combined with the 90% games just show that he's a good player. They don't show that he's... Because there were... Like, even... I mean, Capablanca played before there were chess engines, and he had a 100% game, right? I don't think it's impossible that somebody can have some games that are 100%. No, it's not. It's not impossible. Especially a young person who's really played a lot with chess engines, using the chess engines. I think that this is going to be maybe. We'll find out in the future whether a lot of young players can do this, play these 100% games. Occasionally, because it's just it's new. That's what it's something that hasn't happened before, where somebody plays that many games that are 100%, right? But that doesn't mean that it's illegal or anything. It just means that the world changes. I mean, we know that the world changes because people create things, right? Or the world degenerates too. Because I mean, that's right. If you call it evolution, right? It's gone backwards because computers are not as advanced as the human brain in terms of they're stupid. Computers are stupid. They just do crunching of numbers. So, I mean, it's the evolution is a backward step always. Evolution is a backward step in terms of. God created the universe, and then it evolved in the sense that it went backwards from there. So everything goes in a deteriorating path from there. God made man, and then we deteriorated from there. Everything goes backward. Chess was created as a game, and then it evolved by involving computers, which is a degeneration. It's a technological advancement. It's not an improvement on the human being at all. It's the opposite. It's a degeneration of a human being into a computer. It's not, there's no compassion in a computer. There's nothing, there's no good things in a computer. It's just a bunch of number crunching. Okay, so, I mean, there's none of the beautiful things about humanity contained in a computer. Although they're trying to, you know, make AI and things like that. But anyway, so the whole idea of this chess scandal, I needed to clarify once again, because Hikaru came out with this supposedly incriminating, he just insinuates, right, with some kind of sarcasm. So it's, or either that, or he's believing that Hans is a good player. But no, he's being sarcastic because maybe he's jealous about the ability of Hans Niemann. So we can't, there's no evidence that Hans is cheating other than this statistical so far, which is not really evidence about cheating. It's evidence about great play. So, I mean, I think that's the summary of it. But, so Hans should take it as a compliment. He should jump for joy if he's not cheating. He should be rejoicing and leaping for joy because he's being persecuted. So, what are we going to do? Let's see. Maybe we'll do Proverbs 28. Let's see. Now, I'm not updating my website right now because I'm producing videos every single day. So, the wicked do flee when there is no pursuer, but the righteous are like a young lion that is confident. Wow. And that's sort of the way Hans is. He's like a young lion. Because of the transgression of a land, many are its successive princes, but by a discerning man having knowledge of right, the prince will remain long. An able-bodied man that is of little means and that is defrauding the lowly ones is as a rain that washes away so that there is no food. Those who are leaving the law praise the wicked one, but those who are keeping the law excite themselves against them. Men given to badness cannot understand judgment, but those who are seeking Jehovah can understand everything. Better is the one of little means who is walking in his integrity than anyone crooked in his ways, although he is rich. An understanding son is observing the law, but one having companionship with gluttons humiliates his father. He that is multiplying his valuables by interest and usury collects them merely for the one showing favor to the lowly ones. He that is turning his ear away from hearing the law, even his prayer is something detestable. He that is causing the upright ones to go astray into the bad way will himself fall into his own pit, but the faultless ones themselves will come into possession of good. A rich man is wise in his own eyes, but the lowly one who is discerning searches him through. When the righteous ones are exulting, there is abundant beauty, but when the wicked ones rise up, a man disguises himself. He that is covering over his transgressions will not succeed, but he that is confessing and leaving them will be shown mercy. Happy is the man that is feeling dread constantly, but he that is hardening his heart will fall into calamity. As a growling lion and an onrushing bear is a wicked ruler over a lowly people. A leader that is in want of true discernment is also abundant in fraudulent practices, but he that is hating unjust profit will prolong his days. A man burdened with the blood guilt for a soul will himself flee even to the pit. I'm having trouble with this one. Jehovah, help us in Jesus' name. A man burdened with the blood guilt for a soul will himself flee even to the pit. Let them not get hold of him. He that is walking faultless will be saved, but he that is made crooked in his ways will fall at once. He that is cultivating his own ground will have his sufficiency of bread. And he that is pursuing valueless things will have his sufficiency of poverty. A man of faithful acts will get many blessings, but he that is hastening to gain riches will not remain innocent. The showing of partiality is not good, nor that an able-bodied man should transgress over a mere piece of bread. A man of envious eye is bestirring himself after valuable things, but he does not know that want itself will come upon him. He that is reproving a man will afterward find more favor than he will that is flattering with his tongue. He that is robbing his father and his mother and is saying it is no transgression is a partner of a man causing ruination. He that is arrogant in soul stirs up contention, but he that is relying upon Jehovah will be made fat. He that is trusting in his own heart is stupid, but he that is walking in wisdom is the one that will escape. He that is giving to the one of little means will have no want, but he that is hiding his eyes will get many curses. When the wicked rise up, a man conceals himself, but when they perish, the righteous become many. Proverbs chapter 28. He that is giving to the one of little means will have no want, but he that is hiding his eyes will get many curses. He that is trusting in his own heart is stupid, but he that is walking in wisdom is the one that will escape. He that is trusting in his own heart is stupid, but he that is walking in wisdom is the one that will escape. Yeah, I have some phonetic problems with some of these. And other times it's the fact that my memory of the verse is different from the way it is actually written. I have a memory stored up of the verse, and I think it goes a certain way, and my mind remembers it that way. That's why I read it differently, and I stumble when I read it. But for the most part, I know these, all of them, because once you read them once, if you're in a very, you know, good state of mind when you read them, then you remember them. I mean, that's the thing about God's Word. It's truth, and it goes into your heart. I mean, the Bible says it's truth. It says it's true. It's truth. Where is that? Your Word is truth, right? We get the cross references. We can look up Your Word is truth. Okay. See, Your Word is truth in the JW Library app. Oh yeah, Psalms. Psalms 1. It's today's year text for. It's this year's year text for next year. I mean, it's the year text for next year that's already known. Psalm 119:160. The substance of Your Word is truth. John 17:17. Jesus repeats that. Your Word is truth. He says so. But I want to set a timer because What? Because I want to. I'm supposed to call somebody. Where's my? I don't. Yeah, I can't do it. Well, yeah, I can do it. Wait a minute. So it's like it's 12. Okay, so let's do it. We want 12 o'clock, 2 hours. Two times 3,600 seconds. 7,200 seconds is 2 hours, right? 3,600 seconds per hour. So I'm going to set a timer. Oh, I can set number of minutes. Okay, good. My timer allows minutes, so I can set 120 minutes is 2 hours. That'll start the timer. That'll be a timer. If I'm sitting at my computer, it'll remind me 10 minutes beforehand. I can set a timer in several different terminal windows if I want here. I think I'll set another one just to make sure that I've got something here. Let's set a one for 100 minutes. 12 o'clock? Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, I think that's good. That'll get me some advance notice of when I'm supposed to call somebody. Okay, so I'm supposed to call my advisor. Okay, so anyway, let's get this thing summed up here. I mean, this is a particularly amazingly fitting scripture where it talks about the wicked do flee when there's no pursuer. Hans is not fleeing from the accusations. He stood up to them, right? He stood up to them. So the wicked do flee when there's no pursuer. I mean, they're running away when no one's chasing them. But he's standing up, and they were chasing him, and he stood up to them. He's confident. So I don't think there's any proof at all. None. No, there's, especially since he not only plays 100% correlated games, there's only 10 of those, and he played them all in the same time period. Maybe he was at his peak at that time period or something, but whatever. That doesn't prove cheating. But he's got all these other games that are 90%, like above 90%, which is unusual also, but it's not unheard of at all. And 100% is not unheard of either. A lot of the great players play an occasional 100% game where it's 100% correlated to the engines, which means they play just like a chess engine computer. Like, they're as good as a computer during those games. But the reason that happens is because they're possibly stumbling onto a game with a set of moves they know, first of all. But then, so they know part of it by memory from the engine, and maybe they know a lot of it. Yeah, there was one game where, that's right, Hikaru took issue because Hans had one game that was 45 moves long, which he scored 100% for 45 moves. So he played 45 moves exactly the same as a chess engine. And that could be taken, if you actually want to believe, if you want to be, you're basically an unbeliever, right? If you believe in people cheating, it takes an unbeliever to believe that. In a sense, you know, you don't trust your opponent. You're saying he's cheating just because he plays well. It takes an unbeliever to think that way, right? If you believe, you just wait until it's manifested. You don't accuse people. You don't insinuate. You don't equate excellence with cheating. Only an unbeliever does that. Right, because they don't believe in God. If you believe in God, excellence is just proof of God. That's what it is. So if you're equating excellence with cheating, you're an unbeliever. That's the idea. That's a simple idea. If you equate excellence with God, which is what that is, God means that most excellent. That's the meaning of the word God. I mean, Elohim. Elohim in Hebrew means the plural of excellence or most excellent. In other words, we are excellent is what it means. So you're not going to allow someone else to be excellent because you're competing with them, but you're an unbeliever. That's what you're saying. Hikaru, you're an unbeliever, apparently. So if you want to be a believer, you've got to accept other people's skill. So, I mean, you've got to speak. And also, you don't talk about people behind their backs. You say it to their face, right? You say it to their face. You either call him a cheater to his face or you shut the hell up. And that makes me mad because, I mean, I was taught this from a very young age. You don't talk about people behind their backs. You know? You talk about it to people's face or not at all. I was taught that by my dad, actually. And that's just saying we don't like gossip, but it's, I mean, you're a coward if you can't say it to someone's face, but you talk about them behind their back. That's just cowardice. Plain and simple. You know, I mean, it makes me mad, so mad that I'm furious when I see that. Especially when there are innocent people who get treated that way. That's what I'm saying. In fact, the most innocent people of all are the ones who get the most of that gossip going on behind their backs. Because they're the ones that are having a hard time staying innocent. And they're trying really hard to stay innocent. And they're really, really, really worthy people because they try hard to stay innocent. So that makes me really, really mad. You know, but when I have anger, I don't use it to talk about people behind their backs. I tell them to their face, or I channel that anger into something constructive, like create something good, write a song, do something. So it's really interesting. Look at this. He that is multiplying his valuables by interest and usury. In other words, you know, usury is like excessive interest and stuff like that. He that is multiplying his valuables by interest and usury collects them merely for the one showing favor to the lowly ones. Brilliant scripture. He that is turning his ear away from hearing the law, even his prayer is something detestable. So the law is important, right? Rules are important. When I said we're all cheaters, we don't deliberately cheat. Nobody, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous concept. Nobody deliberately cheats, okay? Or nobody deliberately breaks the law. They somehow convince themselves that it's legal. That's how they end up breaking the law. And then they find out later that they broke the law, right? Nobody deliberately says, no. Everyone believes in rules of some kind. So whatever rules you believe in, you follow those rules. Nobody's deliberately cheating. That's nonsense. That's a concept of an unbeliever, too. That's another thing. It's a concept of an unbeliever. I mean, all these guys, Levi Roseman is not on that side of, he's not on the unbeliever side of accusing people. I mean, that is good. It's good to be neutral. We need to be neutral. That's right. But when we see somebody who's not neutral, we need to stand up against them if they're hurting somebody who might be innocent, right? I mean, even if somebody is breaking a rule, they may not be aware of it. So it's wrong to... It'll be manifest. At some point, it will manifest itself. You don't have to spread rumors about people. It will become manifest whether you do nothing or not. I mean, you don't have to do anything. Whatever people are doing is manifest eventually. Good works are manifest. Right? I mean, there's that scripture too. Where is that one? Okay, let me do a Bible. Let me do a Google search. Good works are manifest or cannot be kept hid. Right, that's the one. Bible. Okay. There it is. Yeah. 1 Timothy 5:25. Okay. It's brilliant. That's the one. That's the one I'm thinking of. I just remembered it. And I don't need to use a particular translation. I can just Google it. It usually, we'll find it immediately. 1 Timothy 5:25. I mean, you know, speaking to Hans Niemann, if you are, and I don't believe you are cheating, if you're cheating, it would be much better for you if you came forth, spoke about it, and came clean and said something. Obviously, if you're not cheating, you don't have to do anything, and I'm not saying you are doing anything or not doing anything. I'm not saying anything about what I believe. I'm just saying, whatever the situation is, you know what to do, right? But I'm just telling you, in case you don't have any good advice, that this is my advice. So 1 Timothy 5:25, in the same way, the sins of some men, 5:24, are publicly manifest, leading directly to judgment. Okay? But as for other men, their sins also become manifest later. Verse 25 now. In the same way also the fine works are publicly manifest, and those that are otherwise cannot be kept hid. In other words, good works cannot be kept hid. So if this is brilliant play, it can't be kept hid, and that's why these engines are showing 100% correlation, 90% correlations, more than 90%. You can't hide great chess. And Hans is not playing great chess every single time. He's playing a lot of bad chess as well as a lot of good chess. So, he never plays bad chess compared to the average player. I'm not a great chess player because I don't know the rules of chess well enough. So, I mean, who is the cheater? Isn't the cheater the one who can't play chess? Like, they try to play, but they don't. They're kind of cheating to even get in to the tournament because, it depends what you look at as cheating. But, because the cheaters don't follow the rules, right? Well, a person who doesn't know how to play, they're not following the rules at all. Not well. They're more like the cheaters. So, there's different ways of understanding these things. But excellence can't be hidden. It will come forth. It will be manifested. It will become manifest. It can't be kept hid. But also, people's wrongdoing can't be kept hid either. It will become manifest. So anyone who's cheating, I don't care who is, what his name is, anyone who's cheating, it's better to bring it out and admit it, because to confess and get free of it and move on to something better. Because if you don't, it will become manifest. It will. Whether sooner or later, it will be manifest. Very important. So this is Ward Green. I guess I'll end this now. For now, it's September 28th, 2022, 12:02 hours. Great day. Great news. Talk to you later. Bye for now. Praise Jehovah.